and I welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is WebSphere Commerce Data Cache Overview and Configuration. Today's presenter is Robert Dunn. Robert joined the WebSphere Commerce development team in 1997 when it was still called NetCommerce. He has been a payment integration developer, the order component architect, and a performance developer. He designed the original implementation of discounts, shipping charges, taxation, multicultural support, order capture, order management, and more recently, the WebSphere Commerce internal caching capability known simply as the data cache. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Robert. You may begin.
Thank you, David. Let's turn to the first slide. So today we have an overview of the data cache and then a little bit of discussion about how to configure it to get the best that you can out of it. Can we move to the next slide? So the data cache, let's talk a bit about what it is and what it's not. It caches results of specific database queries and low-level commands. It's intended to improve performance and to do that in as transparently a way as possible. It is an internal framework to the WebSphere Commerce, and it is not a generic caching framework, and it cannot be used directly by custom code, although custom code can benefit by using the artifacts that it provides. As much as possible, stale cache content is avoided automatically, and invalidation does not require special customization. Now, for the most part, caching is not enabled by default. Each kind of data cached has its own cost and its own benefit, and these can depend on a number of factors, such as how much memory you have available and what your customer's typical shopping behaviors are. You can explicitly enable each different kind of cache entry and measure the effect each has before deciding to whether to run with it. We generally recommend taking heap dumps to measure the memory footprint of each object cache and looking at the verbose GC to make sure there is still sufficient heap memory free in the JVM. You will be the judge as to how much it improves performance. In testing, we generally see a conservative 20% improvement or more in browse and shop scenarios. And down on some of these slides, I've listed the URL for the Info Center to provide more information about this topic. Okay, David, can we move to slide number 4, please? So the data cache, it's closer to the data than things like edge caching and servlet caching. Edge and servlet caching can be very effective because that caching occurs at a higher level and can greatly reduce the code path for certain kinds of requests. However, such higher-level caching generally requires customization based on each customer's requirements and often requires some sort of compromise, a business compromise, to be effective. The data cache caches lower-level results, and in this way is more similar to the commerce registries, except that the commerce registries don't use Dynacache, whereas the data cache does. And because the data cache uses Dynacache, it provides the flexibility that Dynacache offers in its configuration. Let's move to slide number 5. So a little bit of history about the data cache. The data cache originated during development of version 6 of Commerce when performance analysis showed several expensive queries being frequently and repeatedly executed. At that time, it was simply called additional caching and was described in a support tech note, not in the Commerce Info Center. The additional caching was configured originally as cacheable command entries that could be added to the store's cache spec XML file. So the base cache servlet held the cache entries for the data cache. Around about a FixPack 6 of version 6 of Commerce, the distributed map caching was added. There are a number of advantages to using distributed map object caches rather than the default base cache servlet cache instance. In particular, reduced contention for the base cache instance is a big winner for a good reason to move to distributed map caching. In version 7 of Commerce, contention was further reduced by using multiple object caches for the different kinds of data cached. Each object cache is individually configurable. Let's move to slide number 6. Now, the data cache is aware of the transactions, the database transactions that occur in WebSphere Commerce. And it needs to know that for some reasons that I'll try to explain here. When a thread modifies database data, the changes are not seen by other threads until after the transaction commits. So if an invalidation ID is issued to Dynacache based on changes that are not yet committed, a concurrently executing thread could get a cache miss and put the currently committed, which is the stale data, back into the cache. And for that reason, invalidation IDs that are issued by the data cache are issued to Dynacache only after the current transaction commits. Each thread has its own in-memory local transaction cache. To prevent multiple cache requests for the same cache entry by the same thread during the same database transaction. The local transaction cache also keeps track of any invalidation IDs that have been issued by the current thread during the current transaction. When a subsequent request for data already invalidated in the same transaction is made, the data cache will not use the data that is found in Dynacache, since the data that Dynacache holds is actually stale for the current transaction. Okay, let's move to slide number 7. So, when you enable the data cache, you'll want to tune it before you decide to go into production with it. Be aware that caching lower-level data does not always improve response times, since some frequently executed database queries can, in fact, be very fast. However, when the database is very busy, enabling the data cache will reduce the database load, and that can help improve scalability. Caching is not free. There are increased costs, such as additional memory footprint, possibly increased disk I/O if disk offload is enabled, and possibly increased network I/O due to frequent invalidation IDs being sent to the various cache instances. Let's move to slide 8. So here are some tuning considerations. Basic tuning includes explicitly enabling or disabling each kind of caching and setting the number of in-memory cache entries for each object cache instance. In addition to response times and throughputs, things to measure and consider include memory footprints of each cache, cache hit ratios, and frequency of invalidation for each of the different object cache instances. You can also set the time to live and an inactivity timeout for each kind of data cached. The defaults are shown here as 48 hours for a time to live and 24 hours for inactivity. Let's move to the next slide, number 9. Well, there are lots of different kinds of data cached, and different kinds of data have different characteristics. Let's consider a few examples of these. When you're looking in the Commerce Info Center, it refers to the different kinds of data cached as logical caches. So on this slide, you'll see that I've listed things like organization, country, state, province, etc. These are all referred to as logical caches, and each of those can be individually enabled or disabled. Each of those is mapped to an object cache instance. So we have the logical caches, which of which there are many, and then we have the object caches, which actually hold the cache data, and those are distributed map object cache instances. So, for example, the system object cache holds cache entries for logical caches that have frequently used, rarely changed system kinds of data, which are characterized by high hit ratios and low LRU eviction rates. Organization, country, currency, language, that kind of data never changes and is used all the time. These kinds of things are put into the system object cache. We have another one that's very similar called the contract object cache, and this holds business policy data, also frequently used and rarely changed. Let's move to slide number 10. So promotion and marketing data caches are less frequently used, but still rarely invalidated. Their hit ratios are not quite so high, and they can experience some LRU eviction depending on the kinds of marketing spots used. Let's move to the next slide, number 11. The catalog group object cache holds category information, although the hit ratios depend on the number and variety of categories browsed. This kind of cache entry can be quite effective. Let's move to slide number 12. Hit ratios for catalog entry and price-related data are generally very low. While there are generally more catalog entries in a catalog that can be held in memory at the same time, nonetheless, certain very popular catalog entries can remain in memory with high individual hit ratios, even though most of the less popular catalog entries will end up being LRU evicted. It's up to you to measure the positive impact against the cost of additional memory and decide how much memory to dedicate to these kinds of object caches. Let's move to slide number 13. Certain user and session-related queries are frequently executed. User and session-related data is also frequently invalidated, as certain user-related data, such as time of last visit, etc., changes frequently. It makes sense to keep this kind of data in its own object cache to localize the impact of frequent invalidation. We'll talk more about this later. Let's move to slide number 14. There are some kinds of data, starting with version 7, feature pack 2, certain object caches are enabled by default, including caches for FlexFlow, Solr Search, and search engine optimization. These can be turned off, but they are enabled out of the box. It's not recommended to turn them off. Let's move to slide number 15. All right, so how do we enable the data cache? One of the first thing is to create the object caches. Now, whether they are explicitly enabled or enabled by default, all WebSphere Commerce cache instances need to be configured to use either domain replication services or the ExtremeScale DynaCache provider. And the reason that they need these is to be able to, when an invalidation event occurs, to be able to do the invalidation in all of the local cache instances, or in the case of ExtremeScale, in the remote ExtremeScale data grid. There are also several custom properties that must be set to get good performance. And there's a URL there to see more about that. Let's move on to page number 16. So here is a list of the custom properties that must be configured for each object cache. Notice that the provided sample cache instances.properties file, which lists these, does not enable replication and does not include the replication domain name, but you need to add those to the sample. The reason is quite simply that if you include those and you don't have a clustered environment, you know, in a very simple single node setup, that you will see some error messages if these are included. But all production systems that have more than one JVM, App Server JVM, will need to specify the replication domain name and to enable cache replication. The other custom properties, such as filter timeout invalidation and filter LRU invalidation, are very important to get good performance because they stop the sending of unnecessary invalidation events to all the different commerce nodes. Here's a recent one called filter inactivity invalidation that came out in WAS 70021, Fixed Pack 21, as I recall. And so that's an additional improvement that you can get by specifying that one, and all of these are listed in the Commerce Info Center. Let's move on to page number 17. So, measuring and tuning. After enabling, you need to measure and tune. You need to run some simulated browse and shop test cases to measure the costs and benefits of each cache instance. Try to allocate the right amount of memory for each cache, always keeping about 45% of the JVM heap free. You may find reducing the number of web container threads helps free up memory, and that memory may be more effectively used by using the data cache. It's a trade-off you need to measure. Let's move on to page number 18. The cache monitor that comes with WAS version 7, in fact, doesn't let you monitor the object caches. For that, you need the IBM Extended Cache Monitor, which is available from DeveloperWorks. You install the out-of-the-box cache monitor, and then you get the DeveloperWorks Extended Cache Monitor and apply it as an update. And then, when you do that, you get this drop-down that we show there that lists all of the different object caches, and you see that except for the last three, these are all commerce object caches, and the ones that start with WC and end with distributed map cache are the ones used by the data cache. In this list, we also see the DM cache and the DM user cache. The DM stands for dialogue marketing, and these are there are more object caches than just the object caches used by the data cache, and those are a couple of them. Okay, let's move to page 19. There is a data cache API. I often get asked how custom code can do the same kind of low-level caching that the data cache does. And the answer is that the data cache was not designed to be used by custom code. You can use standard DynaCache cacheable commands and servlet cache instances, and your custom code can do very effective caching using servlet cache instances and cacheable commands. However, for the data cache, there is a documented API that can be used for the purposes of issuing invalidation IDs and also to obtain certain access bean objects that know how to use the data cache to cache their copy helper attributes. Let's move to slide number 20. Well, invalidation of cache entries, of course, is the big challenge to any caching design. And data cache tries to make it as transparent as possible. In order to make invalidation as automatic as possible, the data cache generates dependency IDs for each cache entry. Each dependency ID indicates the name of a database table and the column values of the rows the entry depends on. When database changes are made by WebSphere Commerce entity EJBs or by the data service layer, the DSL, matching invalidation IDs are issued to the appropriate cache instances when the corresponding tables or rows are changed. Data cache entries can also be configured with time to live and inactivity timeouts. Optional database triggers are provided to handle other data change scenarios, such as staging propagation of catalog data. Let's move to page number 21. Each cache invalidation trigger inserts a row in the cache IVL table. That table is read and processed periodically by the DynaCache invalidation scheduler job, which recognizes invalidation IDs intended for the data cache and sends them to the appropriate object cache instances. Let's move to slide number 22. So, if you look in the cache monitor at the data cache object caches, you'll see dependency IDs that look kind of like this. And if you look in the cache IVL table, if your triggers are enabled and you make changes to certain tables, you may see entries like this in the cache IVL table. Now, this actually is a naming convention by which we can recognize the data cache invalidation IDs. In fact, you won't find this documented anywhere. And that's because you don't, this naming convention is internal to commerce, and you don't actually need to know about this. But if you see them, you may find it interesting to be able to understand what the convention is. So they all start with WC and then another letter, which is either D, N, or T. And that indicates that a delete of a row has occurred, or a D indicates a delete, and the N indicates either an insert or an update, and a T indicates that one or the other happened, we're not sure which. The column values that you see there, they may be an empty string, indicating that that's a null database value. They may be a percent sign and a colon and then followed by a value, which is the way that we show that there is a what the actual value of that column is. Or they may be a question mark to indicate that this invalidation applies to some value, but we're not quite sure what that value is. Okay, let's move to the next slide, 23. So there are a few special invalidation IDs that sometimes is useful to know about. The WCT plus question mark is a dependency that every data cache entry specifies. So if you issue this invalidation ID in the cache IVL table, for example, you will clear all of the data cache object caches. There's another one, WCT plus and then the table name and then plus a question mark is one that all cache entries that depend on data from that specified table include as a dependency. So if you have made some changes to a particular table and you want to make sure that the data cache entries that rely on that table are cleared, then this is a way to do that. These are very coarse-grained data cache invalidations. All right, let's move to the next page, 24. So the performance of handling invalidations can be a concern. Each invalidation that is issued must be sent to all of the appropriate caches, and it needs either to be sent via the domain replication services or to the extreme scale grid. But when we have frequent invalidation activity, this can lead to performance degradation. Cache hits are delayed while entries are removed from each cache. And that's a good reason to keep keep multiple separate object caches so that invalidation occurring in one cache doesn't affect getting hits in another cache, such as the base cache. This is especially true for extreme scale, so we want to make sure to try not to invalidate frequently elements, cache entries from extreme scale. In particular, user and session-related cache data are frequently invalidated. So it makes sense to keep those things out of extreme scale. Some customers rely on session affinity and disable DRS. Now, when that happens, they're assuming that the invalidations that occur only need to affect the data that's in the JVM where the invalidation has occurred. Generally, running without DRS is not supported. Like I say, some customers in certain situations will disable DRS and will come up with their own solutions for keeping their cache consistent. Let's move on to the next page, 25. So there is a relatively new data cache configuration which will help you reduce the number of invalidation IDs that are issued. So in the cross-transaction cache tag of the instance properties tag in the WC Server XML instance configuration file, there is a tag called reduce invalidation IDs. Now, what does that do? It cuts down the number of invalidation IDs issued by the data cache by about 50 to 66%. Remember, I talked about the naming convention and how it's subject to change. And the naming convention had a WCD and a WCN and a WCT. So when you set this flag, we get rid of the WCDs and WCNs, and we only issue the WCT invalidation IDs. And when we create the dependencies, we don't create dependencies with WCN or D. We create them only with WCT. This actually provides a slightly coarser cache invalidation but practically speaking, it seems to be not usually significant. So we remove a little bit of the sophisticated naming convention, reduce the number of invalidation IDs that are issued, and it can be a performance win. Let's move on to the next page, 26. Well, you may know about the Sales Center. The Sales Center does do caching, and one thing that it caches is customer data or user-related data. It also, and that cached user-related data needs to be invalidated whenever the user-related data changes. And as it turns out, that is quite frequently. And so if we want to reduce the number of invalidation IDs, then we really want to turn off the customer-related caching that the Sales Center does. Now, there is an APAR for this listed at the bottom of the page here, and it is targeted for 6-pack 6 of WebSphere Commerce 7. So that if you, when you move to 6-pack 6, you will no longer need this APAR. So several of our larger customers have found that this APAR helps reduce the number of invalidations that are flowing. And especially if you're using Extreme Scale, you probably want to have this APAR. Even if you're not actively using the Sales Center, the Sales Center invalidations are issued unless you apply this APAR and enable it as shown here. So you want this one. Let's move on to page 27. Okay. Customers with a large number of Commerce Application Server, JVMs, can benefit from the increased scalability that Extreme Scale provides. In the testing that we've done here, we've shown faster cache warm-up. We've shown that we've reduced the JVM memory footprint because now the base cache entries are no longer kept locally, but they're in a remote object grid. We've seen actually reduced application server CPU demand. So, and once again, the reason is because the work of maintaining the cache and getting the cache hits is done by Extreme Scale in a remote JVM, not in the application server JVM. And we have generally seen improved response times when there are large numbers of JVMs using a remote Extreme Scale object grid. Let's move on to page 28. So to use Extreme Scale with data cache, once you've got Extreme Scale installed, it's very simple to configure Commerce to use it. use in the WASAdmin console, you select the Extreme Scale Dynacache provider. And doing this, as I mentioned, will free up memory. And now that you've freed up the memory by using Extreme Scale, why not go to your data cache object caches, which are generally in the local JVM, and give that memory to the data cache object caches. Help increase your hit rate, especially for those catalog entry and price-related object caches. Optionally, you can use Extreme Scale for selected object caches. Once again, the catalog entry and the price and the inventory, those ones require quite a bit of memory to get a good cache hit ratio, and you may find that it makes a good sense to configure those to use Extreme Scale as well. However, as we will see, it is generally not a good idea to use extreme scale for frequently invalidated user and session-related data. Let's move on to slide number 29. All right. Well, this is how we actually do the configuration. We select that provider, and we specify the extreme scale specific JVM custom properties, which are documented, and I gave the URL here for the extreme scale related JVM custom properties. If you're configuring some distributed map object caches to use extreme scale, then there are two places where these are defined. Some of them are defined under the WASAdmin console resources section, and you configure those similar to the base cache with the specific JVM custom properties that are mentioned in the info center. For the object caches that are defined in the cache instances properties file, and those are the optional ones, there's another spot in the info center that documents the custom properties to set for those cache instances. And once you've done that, that's about it for configuring object caches or the base cache to use extreme scale. Let's move on to page number 30. So we've said a few times, don't configure user and session data for extreme scale. Do configure user and session data with the default DynaCache provider for local in-memory caching, and configure disk offload for the user and session data. Do use domain replication service to replicate the invalidation messages. Specify the not shared option for sending invalidation messages only. But other kinds of data can be configured to use extreme scale. All right, let's move on to the next page, 31. So if you are using a 32-bit JVM, you're always worried about how much memory you have free. there is a reduced memory configuration for the data cache to help free up some memory from the data cache. And this, in certain situations, can be a significant win. and those situations are when each category or product has many subcategories, and by many I mean more than 500, let's say, subcategories, products, or SKUs. This is a less well-tested code path, but it has been shown to be quite effective, and it provides significant performance improvement when memory is constrained. So that's something to try on your test system before you go with it in production, if you need it. Let's move on to the next page, 32. Well, if you have 64-bit WAS JVM, you have lots of space. The data cache sizes in the sample cache instances properties file are suitable default values for a 32-bit JVM with 25 to 30 web container threads. WAS 64-bit support means you can increase your heap size. So increase the sizes of your cache instances to take advantage of the increased memory sizes. Always remember to keep about 45% of your heap free. Well, let's move on to page 33, and we've come to the end. So these are the points to take away, the high-level points. The data cache is internal to Commerce. In order to see the benefits it provides, you need to turn it on, and you need to tune it. It works with DynaCache and optionally with Extreme Scale. Please read all about it in the Info Center for WebSphere Commerce, and there's the URL. Now, I'd like to turn the presentation back to David Long.
Thank you, Robert, for a great presentation. And finally, I'd like to mention, don't forget to connect with us. Be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject of WST Subscribe to get a list of mailing lists and to subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know via that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this point, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We have no questions on the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. We also have no questions in the group chat. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Robert, for presenting today.